We ask all the questions that others don't dare. We're dads on the air. We're dads on the air.
Welcome to Dads on the Air for the 24th of March 2009. Have an interesting show coming up. The Maitland Council has become the first council in Australia and perhaps in the world to fund International Men's Day. And we'll be talking to people about that. Councillor Philip Penfold from the council himself is the one that put up the proposal. We'll be talking to him. Warwick Marsh, who's become a bit of a celebrity, alleged homophobe in Australia today after these days, after his stoush with the government over a health committee. More of that later. And Dr. Elizabeth Seely, who's also quite a proponent of the day. First up, we'll just look at some news.
Yeah, look, for those of you who've been following the federal government's development of finally a national men's health policy, they've actually been rolling out these what they call community consultations around the country over the past month or so, and they've had them in Canberra, Tasmania and Sydney so far, and they've rolled out the next batch of them. So coming up, we have on the 1st of April, we have one in Grafton, 2nd of April in Newcastle, and the 7th of April in Brisbane. And these are a chance for people to get along and actually tell the government what they want from a men's health policy. I went to the one in Bankstown in Sydney a couple of weeks ago, and the minister was actually there, which was great. Nicola Robson was there, and everyone had a chance in a small window, so everyone had a chance to sort of voice their ideas, and there was a good range of ideas there.
So, what were the main things that people were talking about?
Mainly, people were talking about the lack of services for men in general, especially men in crisis, and that they've, you know, they've one, it's often the women who stand up and say this, but one woman stood up and said, you know, I've been working in women's health for 30 years and we've got women's health centers and we've got this, that and the other for women. And why on earth can't men have the same sort of thing? But then as well as more services for men, it's actually making existing services men friendly, so adjusting GPs and hospital and all sorts of health services so that they're open after hours, so that, because most men, we know, you know, 90% or 95% of fathers work either full time or overtime, and they often can't attend during the hours that GPs are open. So, you know, making the services so that the men can attend them, those sort of ideas.
Good. So you think it's a genuine attempt to improve things, or what?
I don't know. I'm a bit of a cynic with the political process. I think the government had to say that they've consulted with the people in terms of developing this policy, and they are doing this. A non-cynic may say that this is their genuine attempt to incorporate all views into their policy. What is notably absent, though, is any call for public submissions. So there's no actual formal process where anyone, either an individual or an organisation, can actually write into the government and say, here's my submission on the public record for what we think should be in a men's health policy.
There was some submissions you could make to some Senate.
Yeah, well, here's where it gets interesting.
But that was very, so brief, almost no one knew of it.
Well, the history of that is that the other side of politics, interestingly, and this is where it all becomes political, the Liberal Party, so one of the Liberal senators proposed that there be a Senate Select Committee into men's health. And that was supported by the independents in the upper house. The Greens didn't vote against it. I can't say that they enthusiastically supported it, but they didn't vote against it, which meant it was carried. The Labor government at the time actually didn't support that inquiry, even though they themselves are putting forward a policy. So, but apparently since then, the government has been very supportive of that inquiry. That inquiry does allow for public submissions, but it was a very brief window. People only knew about it for a couple of weeks before submissions were due. But that Senate Select Committee on Men's Health is going ahead. They're going to have public inquiries where they will get people to come in and
So is the chance to make a contribution or a submission to that over?
The official deadline has passed, but from talking with people on the committee, I think there is a chance that if anyone wanted to get a submission in, they may have some flexibility in terms of it. Mm, so yeah. if you just Google Senate Select Committee Men's Health, put that into Google, it'll be the first hit that comes up, and there's a phone number there you can ring, give them a call and say, look, would you accept a submission? So,
all right. I should introduce everyone in the studio today. Ian Purdy from ianpurdy.com.
Good morning, listeners.
Phil York from Dads in Distress.
Good morning, everyone.
Greg Anderson, who's closely involved with Men's Health Australia and is also the researcher and webmaster on our show.
And good morning.
Does a great job too. And myself, John Stapleton. So welcome, everybody. Now, off
okay.
you go.
Okay. Well, there's it would appear from a couple of articles appearing this morning in the mainstream media that John Howard's reforms to custody laws are actually having a slight effect. The most interesting thing is the way that the Telegraph and the Australian have chosen to report these incidents. We'll start with the Telegraph. The headline, Sue Dunleavy is the journo who wrote this piece. The headline is Mums Still Get Kids, Family Courts Custody Bias Despite New Laws. The family court is still awarding mothers custody of children in 60% of cases despite a 2006 law creating a presumption of shared parental responsibility. So that kind of gives you the drift of where the Telegraph are coming from. The Australian, dealing with exactly the same information, Michael Pally writes under the heading Dads Who Fight Win Favour in Custody Cases. Fathers who want custody of their children will have more success in the family court than by trying to strike a deal with their ex-partners. In a break with conventional wisdom, fathers are twice as likely to get majority custody of their children if they take their fight to court. So you can see there the two different approaches. The Australian saying that fathers are better off, and the Telegraph saying that mums still get the kids and nothing's really changed. What do you think, people? Is this journalism, that two papers basically from the same stable with a different point of view assessing the same information and coming to different conclusions?
Yeah, I think so, mate. I think so, for sure. I guess from the dads that we see in Dads in Distress, there are a degree of increase with some dads that are getting increased time insofar as it's not so much every second weekend and half the school holidays anymore. There tends to be sometimes midweek stuff and, the odd case gets, basically 50-50 or 40-60.
Yeah, the bottom line is it's taken all the power away from the mums who traditionally had all the power in the situation. Poor old quaking dad there moving out of the house with his suitcase and his toothbrush, to move into a flat with a mattress on the floor and menus from all the local takeouts. It's changing a bit. Courts are, there's a lot of statistics in here. I won't go through the statistics. If anybody wants to look up the statistics, there's a very nice graph in the Australian, which shows, it does show that basically fathers' rights are slowly being recognised slightly more. Fathers are being recognised as parents at last. Hallelujah.
And the interesting thing is when you look at those statistics that for those dads that are getting more a greater share of custody and access to their children, that the reasons given by the court in a lot of cases is domestic violence by the mother. And this once again flies in the face of all of this white ribbon day crap that we've been fed, that the only people that are violent are men, and that a lot of women who are violent within the home are losing access of their children to the dads. And it's really good that the court is recognising that. That's not reported in the stories, but if you look at the statistics on the family court's website, that's very evident.
Yeah, they ignore that. They actually say the statistics show the main reason fathers were granted access to children for less than 30% of time was abuse and family violence in 29% of cases. So they're still focusing on male to female abuse and not
right.
If not you look, focusing on abuse as abuse per se.
Right, and the statistics are almost the same for the women who are denied as for the men who are denied. If a man or a woman is violent, they're less likely to be have access to their kids, and that's good.
Yeah, that's a great. Yeah, we support that. So there you go.
All right. There is another entertaining story. We'll come back to that later in the show on restoration of the court, isn't it?
Yes. We'll come back to that later.
Yes, it's been a great deal of money.
The high rollers in the family court, yes.
How much was it? 26,000 on bone china or something.
Bone china for the family court?
All right, we'll be back in a moment. We'll be talking with Philip Penfold. He is the councillor from the Maitland Council who's made history by becoming the first government organisation, certainly in Australia, to support International Men's Day. We'll be back.
So fast. You have to cherish every moment.
Please, Daddy.
You have a right to be involved in the life of your child.
What do you care? It's not like you were ever there anyway.
Dads in Distress meet in your area every week. If you're a non-custodian parent and would like to know who to contact or just want someone to talk to, help is just a phone call away. Dads in Distress, 1300 853 437 or dadsindistress.asn.au.
We're back talking with Councillor Philip Penfold from the Maitland Council in the picturesque Hunter Valley, north of Sydney. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Now, you've made history, we understand, by becoming the first council in Australia to support International Men's Day, the first government organisation to do so, as far as we know.
Yes, thank you. I've heard that a couple of times. It was certainly not my intention to try to make history, but try to make a difference and bring back some balance to the inequality of that. Yeah.
Great. So can you just tell us the story, basically? I mean, what motivated you and where did it begin and then what happened within the council itself?
Yeah, sure. The motivation, I guess, was the when the new council was elected back in September last year, soon after I became aware that in the annual report that we were presented with, that it talks of the social planning efforts that council have made to help many different groups in the community. Though I noted that men were clearly left out of that. When I raised the question with council management in the meeting, I was told that the Local Government Act for New South Wales identifies many different groups in society that need to be accounted for in the council's social planning. Now, these include babies, youth, the elderly, people who are from a non-English speaking background, Indigenous people, but women, clearly identified as a group on their own, but it clearly left out men. It was almost a deliberate list that had everybody but men. it was so blatantly obvious that I had to ask the question. And the reply that I got was the Local Government Act required the council to act on all those groups, but it did not identify men.
Isn't that amazing?
So several months later, when there was an item in the council's agenda regarding International Women's Day, I thought, well, gee, I wonder if there's International Men's Day, and this might be an opportunity to help right that wrong, because my argument was that just because the Local Government Act doesn't require the council to support men, doesn't mean the council shouldn't do it anyway. So I put forward what I thought was a bit of a obvious motion to support, which was that the council should support International Men's Day, and if funding is not available via a grant, the council should fund it out of their own resources. Now, the International Women's Day for local councils is actually funded by a grant, largely funded by a grant that women or councils get from the Office of Women. Now,
and how much is that, do you mind me asking?
Yeah, no, I believe that to be $1,000.
Sorry, how much?
$1,000.
Right.
So, as far as you're aware, most councils in Australia who want to recognise and celebrate International Women's Day would receive a similar size grant?
Yeah, I believe that the total given out this year by the Office of Women was in excess of $113,000. Now, there are 160, I believe, councils.
Mm.
So I would be very confident that 113 of them or more may have applied for that grant and been successful.
Those grants given out to schools too, isn't there? I mean, my son's school, they had a month-long celebration for International Women's Day.
Yeah.
The celebrations lasted a month.
Yeah, it seems to be a month or a week, but I'm not looking to take away from International Women's Day. I'm sure women have issues of their own they like to raise, but men clearly do as well. And I thought this was an obvious motion for everyone to support, and I was surprised to see that two of the councillors chose not to, which is what's caused this to be quite a bit of a media storm, particularly locally, that those two councillors that chose not to support it were 100% of the women that are on the council.
So how much do you think this is a media storm or a media beat-up, and how much do you think there's a genuine story there that, you know, you, obviously once the media gets involved, things can sort of be blown out of proportion. From your perspective, how do you see, you know, maybe the reasons or the rationale behind that vote in council, and what...
I'm very grateful for the media storm. I think it's what we need to bring attention to the issue that the men have, the many issues that men have. And I suggested to one of the councillors that advised me 2 days earlier that she would be not likely to support the vote, that if she did, it would become a media storm, and that it would probably only help the men's cause. She was not adverse to that anyway, so... So she continued on that path. But look, I'm still bewildered as to why they chose to vote that way. It obviously helped bring attention to the cause, and that's helpful for the men of Maitland.
Now, we should just say at this point that we did invite Councillor Tierney, who's one of the female councillors on Maitland Council who voted against this proposal to come on the show today, and she politely declined, so we should let listeners know that. What was their rationale in not supporting this motion?
With respect, I'm not sure. The reasons I were told were many and varied. On the night of the motion, the Councillor Tinney's suggested that it be deferred for a year so men can get their act together to form committees to help make it happen. But, you know, it's been put off for so long, I don't see a reason to put off a year just to have the council fund $1,500. I mean, it was a motion moved in March for an event in November, so there's clearly ample time. I don't think the reasons were... I don't think the reasons given were perhaps the true reason in the heart of the councillors that chose not to support it. I think it was felt more that this would detract from International Women's Day. I mean, I did move this motion the week after International Women's Day.
Which could have been seen as slightly provocative, I guess.
which could have been. I did take advice on that, and I chose to proceed as per the advice and move it at that time. I mean, it kept the fact that we did support the Women's Day. Now, the prior council meeting, the councillors did choose to support and fund, because the council itself partly funded the International Women's Day for Maitland. So the meeting prior, 100% of the councillors supported it. So the meeting after, I sought to have them support the same thing for men, and I didn't think it would be an issue, and I thought it better to ask at that time, while the fact that they just supported Women's Day was fresh in their minds.
So is there anything here at stake besides pure, unadulterated, good old-fashioned garden sexism?
Well, I seriously don't think... These women actually work in the industry of health.
Yeah, one of them is involved with the suicide prevention, I believe, as the chair of one of the local...
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, so... Yep, go on, sorry.
So my point is that I seriously don't believe that they're not supportive of men. I think that they're... I mean, I can't speak for them, obviously, and you gave them the chance to speak, but I seriously think it was more that they feared we were detracting from their day by having a day of our own. Now, clearly your listeners and yourselves would think that quite odd, but...
Well, we support, you know, breast cancer, you know, week, and we also support Movember. I mean, you can support women and support men.
Supporting
one doesn't detract from the other in any way. It doesn't make any sense to me, and probably you may think the same.
I agree, and that's exactly my point on the night. I said that this is in no way to detract from International Women's Day. We're merely trying to show the support for men, and I thought International Men's Day was an ideal opportunity to get the council to be involved in men, and things have snowballed from there. It's been very good to see. We've here in Maitland, not the council, but myself and Dads in Distress have made efforts to get a screening of men's group, the movie. We're going to be having that at the start of National Men's Health Week in June.
Great,
yeah. 8th of June, so it's gone on from there. We've had a lot of support from other men's health consultants. I think it's Greg Millen from Newcastle, who's a men's health consultant, has approached me, and we've arranged to try to get council management to run a forum for ideas for the national men's health policy that the new government is working on. So it's led to other things already.
We'll be back in a moment. We're talking with Councillor Philip Penfold from the Maitland Council. He's made history by bringing his council to become the first council or government organisation in Australia to support International Men's Day. We'll be back in a moment.
To be a grandmama, love in these times.
stress meet in your area every week. If you're a non-custodian parent and would like to know who to contact or just want someone to talk to, help is just a phone call away. Dads in Distress, 1300 853 437 or dadsindistress.asn.au.
We're back with Dads on the Air.
Yeah, sisters doing it for themselves. Just like to comment, that song was written by Dave Stewart, a man. The bass player, the drummer and the guitarist were all men. The keyboard player was a man, and the only people in the band who weren't men were the two singers. Thank you.
So we're talking with Councillor Philip Penfold from Maitland Council. Are you there, Philip?
Thank you, yes. How are you?
Now, look, do you think this is part of a sort of broader... At the moment, for instance, we're seeing all the major groups being defunded. Dads in Distress is about to lose its funding, as far as we know, the Lone Fathers, Fatherhood...
Yep, Fatherhood Festival up in northern New South Wales. They've got dads programs that are losing funding in June this year.
Not sure whether Men's Line's losing its funding, but a significant number of these groups are losing money.
Which is quite odd, isn't it? Because I think we're actually finding that we're getting a bit more of a momentum in the men's movement, if you call it that. You know, we've seen the tension from Movember. We see schools get more involved in Father's Day breakfasts. We see, and I know here in Maitland, there are more men's breakfasts for International Men's Day and other days. So I think there's starting to be a bit more support and a bit of tension with prostate awareness and the like, but... You know, the contrast is that the government seems to be not seeking to fund these vital programs, so I'm bewildered by that.
And yet, at the same time, the same government, and, you know, admittedly a different department, the health department, is being, once again, history-making in proposing the very first national men's health policy.
That's right.
And yet the other, you know, the Department of Families, or FACSIA, whatever they're called these days, they, which funds all of these different men's support groups, seems to be not interested in continuing funding. It seems rather strange and almost hypocritical that the government is sort of giving with one hand and taking away with the other.
Absolutely. We've perhaps got too many cooks. You know, I'd bewildered as to why the funding for such things comes from other departments when, you know, obviously health have an interest in men at the moment, and perhaps this funding should be looked after by the health department rather than FACSIA.
Well, do you think if we had a separate bureaucracy in Canberra that could somehow coordinate the different men's issues, just the same way as we have an office for women, if we had an office for men, or even an office for gender that looked after both men and women, that sure, they could somehow get rid of these stupid silos that means that health will fund men but families and communities won't fund them, and somehow coordinate this so that the men get the support that they need. Would you support such an office?
Well, I think an office for women is probably an odd name for sure. I don't know that we need to make it worse by having an office for men. I would suggest that probably lesser agencies and lesser departments
sure,
are probably more helpful than more. But clearly there's a bias. I don't know that I could support an office for women either than for men. There's certainly no point in having one sex be supported and not the other. I fear that... that the reason these things don't come up enough is that male politicians, who I'm sure make up the majority, you know, from local government all the way to federal,
sure,
are too fearful that a policy for men or anything that takes away money for women or support for women will be vote losers, and to support men perhaps would also add further to that. Yeah, it's, like when I put this motion forward, the men in the council, the vast majority, were very supportive of, good on you for doing that, and you know, we've been keen for that, and I've often wondered why there's things for women and not things for men. And I thought, well, you've been in this council for a while. Why would you not have moved such a thing? So I think that's part of the problem. We need to get these male politicians to understand that, you know, it's not just men that will support a motion that supports men. It's these men that are in distress, whether it's their physical or their mental health. These men have mothers and daughters and sons and ex-wives, some of whom are still supportive of the men, you know. So it's not a vote loser. The male politicians need to understand that, you know, a lot of women have had a lot of response from women that are supportive of what we've done here, and it's something that male politicians need to not be afraid to put forward. So, but coming back to your point, I think...
worth pointing out that Albie Schultz down in Hume, the seat of Hume, who was very outspoken, particularly about the child support agency and the operations of that, and then his vote went up by something like 6%.
You certainly don't make those decisions based on vote winning, I don't think, but I don't think they should be fearful that they would lose support. But by the fact
I think
that they've
a lot of politicians are. They strongly believe that if they stand up too strongly, they'll lose a woman's vote. It's an either-or thing.
And I think that's more just a minority of women that are particularly vocal.
Hmm.
You know, not all women, feel the same way as the councillors did on this vote on this occasion at Maitland. So, you know, the vast majority of them think it's, you know, odd not to support men's issues. Men have significant issues, as you men well know. I mean, just as many men die from prostate cancer as women die from breast cancer.
Hmm.
But you don't hear about that.
And do you think there's something else at play in the minds of male politicians, not just a fear of losing either the feminist vote or the female vote, or you know, being seen as, you know, somehow misogynist, or but do you think there's something else? Men traditionally have this feel that they have this role to sort of look after women and children, and that's why they seem to have. This is my pet theory, that they're happy to support women's causes, but there doesn't seem to be this urge in a lot of men to look after men, because men are seen to be able to look after themselves. Do you think that's a play as well?
That's true. I mean, even some men in the community say, you know, International Men's Day, what are you on about? I'm tough, I'm right, I don't need any such thing. And that may be very well true for them, but, you know, one day in the future they may, but certainly their fathers and brothers and friends and relatives, many of them have issues that need support. So some men think, yeah, I'm tough, I'm right, you know, even the politicians, and that we don't need that. But, you know, these men obviously take advice from their, you know, a lot of them would be, you know, partnered and take advice at home before they raise a policy or sound it out at home before they go forward with it out into the public or into the parliament. So I think we're heading in the right direction, but more of these male politicians need to stand up and, you know, I think we've started a bit of a wave with some of these things in the last couple of years, and we need to press forward with it. We're also not as... There aren't many men that are out there pushing it, not just politicians. You know, there's your show publicly, and there's not a lot else, you know, in the public realm, and I'm sure
I think it's really primitive, you know, that these men want to be all puffed up like little roosters, protecting their chicks and protecting the women, and being looked up to as, you know, heroes by all the women in the office, you know.
Sure. And look, we're not as good at organising it. Men aren't nearly as good as getting together and pushing governments and lobbying for funding and support. And the women do it better.
And do you think, though,
we need to turn that around?
Do you think also? I mean, I take your point that men traditionally may not have organised as well as women, but do you think also that when men do organise, they actually get a lot more doors slammed in their face than women? In the sense that when they do organise, and governments are consistently saying, "Well, you're men. Why do we need that for men? You know, don't men have all the power? You know, surely they get a lot." And that must be a lot more off-putting than if you're a women's group, and you may get a few more doors opened when you actually kick up a fuss.
I think so. Yeah, I think the politicians are more willing to listen to a female voice that you know braves the big strong male politician, and they want to come forward with their issue, and
especially when the local government act sort of specifies that's they're a group that has to be taken care of, and it doesn't say that for men.
Absolutely.
All right, Philip, we're running out of time. It's been a real pleasure to have you on the show. Are there any final points you'd like to make?
I'd just like to encourage the listeners out there to you know go forward and make these representations to their local councillors to look at doing the same type of thing. I think we've started something here, and we can add to that. So, you know, the listeners shouldn't be hesitant to, even email the councillors, email your local members, and let's add to this momentum and push for some change. But thank you for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Brilliant. No, thank you very much for coming on to Dad's on the Air. It's been a pleasure to have you on. That was Philip Penfold. He's a councillor at Maitland Council, and he's made Australian history by becoming the first councillor up there to celebrate International Men's Day in Australia. We'll be back in a moment.
Welcome back. Just a story in The Australian, and I guess it comes on top of all this news about all these groups losing funding, Dads in Distress, Lone Fathers Association, Fatherhood Festival on the North Coast. The story in The Australian today, written by Michael Pelly, the headline says, $900,000 makeover for family court. $900,000 makeover for family court. They are the most stylish officers in any court in the country, and they would want to be after a $900,000 plus renovation bill. Family Court Chief Justice Diana Bryant has turned her chambers and the adjoining conference area in Melbourne into something out of the pages of an interior design magazine. The white leather lounges, modern art, which I might add is her art, which she has lent to the court, and I'm sure there'd be a bit of a payment.
She rented it to them.
Yes, yes. Tiled floors installed last year are not features normally associated with those who dispense justice. The wooden panelling, timber bookshelves and dark furnishings that the High Court chose for its recent Sydney refurbishment are more than usual fare. It goes on to say that the Federal Magistrates Court in the year 2007-2008 financial year spent $60,000 on fine bone china. $60,000 for Miss Bryant to eat from.
Well, if you're going to buy fine bone china, you might as well at least spend a whole lot of money doing it.
Yes. So, you know, it just goes on and on
especially
and on.
Especially if it's taxpayer money.
You know, they the court actually sent photos through to The Australian to try and counter the suggestions that the refit was salubrious, palatial, or even over the top. The spokesman for the court said that Chief Justice Bryant hosted many conferences frequently involving international delegations. And I guess that's what she's standing behind. That's why this $900,000 has been spent to impress the international visitors.
Mm-hmm. What's the delays in the court now? About 2 years or something to get a case heard properly?
Yeah, it's a little bit over 18 months at the moment.
More than 18 months.
Yep. So from filing to final hearing, it's about
it
18 months.
It takes 18 months to go, the dad's a bastard, doesn't get to see his kids, mum's a saint.
Yeah, and meanwhile, you know, while
they get out of here.
While all the stress of their daily job, at least they can go out of their courtroom, go into their nice refurbished offices, sit on their white leather lounges, and drink from their fine bone china. You know, it'll make them feel better about, you know, what they dispense in their courtrooms.
Amputating children, yes.
Yeah, I'd like to see it. Maybe the federal government could have a public consultation process. You know, to see what the community thinks about spending $900,000 on fittings for the family court. You know, if they do this for the health of men, I mean, maybe they could have a little consultation about the decoration of the family court.
Yeah, this is at the same be very time interesting what, to defunding see. Yeah, how everybody.
How much would that $900,000 have done in DIDS's budget.
Exactly, mate. You know, like
how long would that have kept DIDS?
Okay, that would have kept DIDS going at its current funding level for about 3 years.
Yeah.
Oh, well, there you go.
You know, and 3 years. DIDS is literally saving lives every day.
Exactly. Exactly.
Lone farmers get what 50,000 or something a year, doesn't it? Keep them going for decades.
Oh, and of course,
I think the Shared Parenting Council is also losing its funding. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's what I've heard. Yep, that's what I've heard. So you know, it's going everywhere, mate. It's going everywhere.
So they've spent more on their bone china and tiled floors.
Yep.
And white leather lounges.
Yep.
And the entire funding for every single farmers group in the whole country.
That's it.
All of which are being defunded.
Exactly.
And this is at a time when men's issues are actually really coming to the fore. Movember last year, you know, had like over 100,000 guys growing moustaches. They raised, you know, over $20 million worldwide. And, you know, there's this community outpouring of support for men, and the government is just not in tune
with
that.
Yep, they've just turned their backs.
That's it.
Turn their backs.
Amazing. We'll be back in a moment. We'll be talking with Australia's celebrity homophobe, Warwick Marsh.
We love you, Warwick.
We do.
We'll be back.
Professional, I'd love to hear her in confessional. She
They grow so fast. You have to cherish every moment.
Please, Daddy.
You have a right to be involved in the life of your child. Dad's in Distress. 1-300-853-437.
We're back with Dad's on the Air.
And welcome back. Just further on what we were talking about before in regards to the Office of Women and not having an office for men, I just went on to the Office for Women website, and I thought I'd share this with you. This is the opening paragraph, and it says, Whole of Government Influence. The government is committed to strengthening the provision of gender analysis, advice and mainstreaming across the government. The Minister for the Status of Women works with other government ministers to ensure that women's issues and gender equality are taken into consideration in policy and program development and implementation. The Office for Women supports the Minister in this role and is the central source of advice for government agencies on the impact of government policies and programs for Australian women. So this is the role that the Office of Women plays in society, and this is why we're saying that, you know, perhaps there should be either an office for gender or an office, a separate office, which is the Office for Men, who can actually look at the same sorts of things. And just a footnote on this, this Office for Women is funded by FACSIA, the same government department which is taking all the funding off the men's groups.
Why don't we just have an office for people?
Yes.
Yeah, or get rid of, you know, get rid of the Office for Women, as the councillor suggested, and just, you know, let government look after people, as you say, you know.
We have asked a series of questions of the minister involved, Jenny Macklin, and as far as I'm aware, we haven't received a response yet, although we did tell them we were broadcasting on this issue today. So we shall see, but we've certainly asked them to clarify exactly who's losing funding. We now have Warwick Marsh.
G'day, John.
How are you?
Excellent.
Well, we did label you Australia's celebrity homophobe, but that was a bit harsh, wasn't it?
It was tongue-in-cheek.
You guys are so merciless.
We don't know many celebrity homophobes. We're really...
we're proud of you, Warwick.
You guys are working for the Ku Klux Klan, that's all I can say.
Look, your name got more publicity than any of ours ever have, so, you know. And they say that all publicity is good publicity.
Yeah, you're
so.
A celebrity, Warwick. We're a bunch of nobodies.
I wish I was a nobody again. Oh, dear me. The truth, there's an old saying in journalism, I'm sure you understand it, John, never let the truth get in the way of a good story. I've had guys, a young bloke with AIDS, living at home, and we're helping him. And, you know, it was really funny. In the middle of all that kerfuffle, I was going to see him with my sons, and there was a young fellow who was a young guy struggling with homosexuality, and we were out surfing with him and invited him home for breakfast. And I'm thinking to myself, if I'm a homophobe, I shouldn't be having breakfast with this guy.
What should you be having with him, Warwick?
You can't believe the papers.
Right. Anyway, look, we were talking about International Men's Day, and you've been a great proponent of that. Can you talk about... just about the history of it. I don't think a lot of people know the history of it, and of course we had Philip Penfold on earlier from the Maitland Council. So,
okay, well, look, thanks, John. International Men's Day actually has been brewing for 30 years, and you know, it's various guys have done things in various countries, USA, Malta, and others. But in 1999, a gentleman named Jerome Tuckersley, from the Caribbean, proposed the International Men's Day on the 19th of November, and he got that going. And basically, we celebrated International Men's Day last year here in Australia, which we thought it was the first time, but really, there's really nothing new under the sun. And we found out that actually in 2003, the Men's Health and Wellbeing groups in Canberra actually kicked off International Men's Day celebrations here in Australia on the 19th of November. So it has had a checkered history. Some groups have celebrated for a couple of years and they've fallen by the way. The good news is it's really starting to gather momentum around the world. We really were owe a bit of a debt to our dear brothers and sisters in India in the men's movement. Umchala, a lady I spoke to her and contacted by phone, and she really encouraged us to celebrate it here. And of course, we've developed the internationalmensday.com website, which has really become the premium website for International Men's Day worldwide. And you could argue that Australia is now leading the way for International Men's Day, and it's all happening.
So, Warwick, why do men need a day?
Well, I think men need a day, Greg, because we all need encouragement. We all need affirmation. And women have had a International Women's Day since 1910, or 1909, I think, was the first one. So that's been going virtually for 100 years. And look, that's great. And there's been a need to affirm women. There's been a need to encourage women, because women have suffered, especially in the 1800s and early 1900s, and they were given the vote, I think, about 60 years behind men. And we're glad that they have a lot more freedom, a lot more equality, a lot more fairness. But the pendulum has swung the other way, of course, and men are struggling under terrible, shocking family law, legislation, shocking situation when it comes to, the whole child support scenarios. DV legislation is actually getting worse. Even to be a man, you're automatically guilty.
It's written into the laws now that domestic violence is done by men, you know, crazy.
Yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, domestic violence is done by men, and that forgets the actual plain fact of the matter is that, the unfortunate fact of the matter is that studies show that half of violence, of domestic violence, is actually perpetrated by women. And so it would seem that it's much more 50-50 when it comes to this sort of thing, but you never hear of the men getting battered, and I've spoken to many men who've been virtually taken to hospital. It cuts both ways, unfortunately, and we want a day when there's no domestic violence, but let's make sure that we deal with all the situations. But Men's Day, International Men's Day, is not just about these issues. It's about the broader aspect, the broader contributions that men make in society, in their families, in the workplace. And, when there's a war on, everyone looks to the men to...
Or a bushfire.
Bushfires, yeah.
So you say it's not just about sort of the deficits or the things, you know, where men need help, but it's actually about celebrating men, celebrating masculinity, celebrating all the good things that men do every day in the world.
Look, I love the line, Greg, celebrating masculinity, and, you know...
Well, I mean, let's be honest. Masculinity for the last 40 years has been under sustained attack. You know, masculinity has been almost redefined as being something you want to avoid at all costs. I mean, in the political correct world that we live in, it's, you know...
Oh, look, it's crazy, Greg, and I really would agree with you on that very strongly. Can you imagine going to a group of women, and saying... All right, all you women here have got to get in touch with your masculine side. I mean, they just laugh you out of the house. Men have got to learn to be men, and they've got to applaud and understand and dig deep to appreciate who they are as men. And, of course, that's what International Men's Day is all about. And I think you're ringing me in regards to the situation at Maitland Council. Is that correct?
That's right. We had Philip Penfold, who was the councillor who proposed the motion, and which was voted in favour for the council to put a modest contribution towards some International Men's Day celebrations in November this year. So that's the topic of today's show. So what do you think about that? You would obviously be a supporter of initiatives like Maitland Council.
Well, I think Councillor Penfold is a very brave man. And a very, very brave man indeed. And I applaud his actions rigorously. And I would congratulate him on his stand to have International Men's Day. As you said, it's a modest sum. I think $1,500 is the sum in question, which is a very, very small amount considering, you know, a multi-million-dollar budget that Maitland Council would have. Surely, it wouldn't hurt to allocate $1,500 to some celebration of International Men's Day in the Maitland area. But it would seem that that has almost raised an international storm of protest. Is that right, gentlemen?
Well, I'm not sure. All we know is that the two female councils voted against it. It certainly had a great deal of media attention. What's interesting is that, to me, is that there's a bit of a historical parallel here. That for many years that we had a Mother's Day celebration, but there was no Father's Day celebration, and it actually took a while for fathers to get
actually
a celebrator.
Actually, took several centuries, if I understand correctly.
And so, you know, there's a parallel here. But now, in 2009, everyone just accepts that we've got Mother's Day and Father's Day. It's just taken for granted. And I think we'll have the same thing happening here with the...
Except for McDonald's.
Right. With their calendars. There are still some holdouts. McDonald's brought out a calendar this year which had, you know, big Mother's Day celebrations on that date, but nothing for Father's Day.
Are you serious?
Yeah. Serious, mate, yeah.
That was a bit of a serious error. If they're a family restaurant, maybe...
I didn't know. That's really serious.
Yeah, actually. Yeah.
Look, it's you know, we've been working on Father's Day with TV ads, and there's been a real need to sort of amp up Father's Day. And Father's Day actually has risen in the public sphere the last 4 or 5 years quite markedly, and certainly we'd like to see the same with Men's Day, and that's why I think Councillor Penfold is a very courageous, I think he's ahead of his time in many ways. He's groundbreaking, and it's hard when you're groundbreaking, get attacked and accused and belittled, but someone has to do it, and he's a pioneer, and we congratulate him. But look, you know, around the world, it is definitely gathering momentum. We're lining up. There was quite a divergence on the International Men's Day celebrations. Some people celebrated different parts of the year. And Malta have recently come across and decided to join with the 19th, which is now celebrated in probably well over a dozen different countries, and they're very big countries, like of course India and you know, USA, and of course Russia is interesting because they started off World Men's Day, Mikhail Gorbachev. And you know, we are trying to contact them to see if we can even get them to move across to the 19th, because they actually have a celebration. I think it's around the first or the first week of November. And so, look, it's gathering momentum, and I think you're right, Greg, that over a period of time we will see International Men's Day become a very important day in the calendar, just as International Women's Day is an important day in the calendar, and that will be for the good of humanity as a whole.
Warwick, I'd like to play devil's advocate here and chuck you a curly question. What would you say to people who said that what occurred at Sydney Airport on Sunday afternoon was actually a celebration of masculinity and men's action and all that horrible brawl, and there were no women involved in that? I mean, isn't this the kind of activity that these women are objecting against? Isn't events like this that basically bring the whole male sex into, you know, contempt? Could you comment on that?
Look, it's a very good question. I don't see it as a curly question. Some people might, but I just see it that it's a simple case of good and evil. I think that, Bettina Arndt said that there's no gender has a monopoly on vice. And I think what we've got to learn to understand, we've got to separate good and evil, right and wrong, away from genders. You know, because a woman's a woman doesn't mean she's good or doesn't necessarily mean she's bad. Because a man's a man, it doesn't mean he's good or bad. There is such a thing as right and wrong. And we live in a society that's tried to devalue right and wrong in the sense that, you know, look, it's wrong is what you want it to be and right is what you want it to be, and you can, you know, if it feels good, do it. And as you would probably understand, I'm not a proponent of that sort of thinking. And in fact, I believe that sort of thinking is at the very root of the whole emasculation of, you know, of manhood. Because they've tried to find, once you actually say there's no such thing as good and evil, you actually got to find other things that are evil. And so masculinity became the new evil, inverted commas. And so masculinity had to be stamped out. And of course, it was men that went to war. It was men that committed a lot of violent crime. It was men that did a lot of bad things. But, you know, there's such a thing as bad men and good men, and such a thing as good women and bad women. And so you actually have to understand that you've got to look beyond the masculinity. You've got to look at what is right and what is wrong. And what happened at Sydney Airport is atrocious and absolutely sickening, and it's inexcusable.
We're going to have to wind it up there. Thank you so much, Warwick Marsh from Fatherhood Foundation. He's done a lot of good work over the years for fathers. So, look, thank you very much for backgrounding us on the history of International Men's Day. We'll be back in a moment. We'll be talking with Dr. Elizabeth Seeley, on the same subject. We'll be back.
All the best, then. Thank you.
Thank you.
Cheers. Welcome back to Dad's on the Air. On the line now, I believe from Melbourne, we have Dr. Elizabeth Shelley, the author of the fantastic book Regular Joe versus Mr. Invincible, The Battle for the True Man. Elizabeth, great to have you once again on Dad's on the Air.
Thank you very much. Good morning.
Well, today, as you're probably aware, we've been talking about this bit of a media storm around International Men's Day, and you, I believe, took part in the celebrations of International Men's Day in Sydney last year. Do you want to maybe start by letting us know how you celebrated the day last year, and then we can sort of move on from there?
How I celebrated the day, certainly I was a part of it. I was looking toward it, actually, earlier in the year, so it was on my calendar and on my agenda. So first thing in the morning, as you mentioned, I'm from Melbourne, so first thing in the morning upon getting ready to fly up to Sydney to help celebrate at the lunch at New South Wales Parliament, I first of all texted all my men friends, and I wished them all a very happy International Men's Day. And their responses were great. It really set the scene for the day. They were very happy to receive that acknowledgement and that celebration.
Were some of them unaware that it actually was?
They were. Some of them were unaware, but in that they still responded and said, you know, thank you, my friend, or that's wonderful, or great, we'll have a coffee and we'll catch up about it. And I think to even surprise them, I was even happy just to see that. I knew some of them didn't know about it, and they know that I'm very much involved with my men's health work. So it was lovely to share it on that personal level, and then
it was great
to share it at the lunch itself and be able to address the audience there with some stories and examples of being able to value manhood and masculinity and the benefits that it does offer. So it was great to have that opportunity to celebrate it and be a part of it. It was lovely being in that environment. I had a lot of great reflection time on the plane back to Melbourne with a massive smile on my face. I hate to imagine what people on the plane might have been thinking about, but hey, you know, if it helped their International Men's Day, why not?
That's great. Now, you work actually as a... is it a psychologist?
That's correct.
Yeah, yes. Private practice, and obviously a lot of your clients are men. And you've talked quite passionately about the need for men to really, in a sense, reclaim their healthy manhood. A lot of men, I think you've said, forgive me if I'm misquoting you, but they often don't speak up in their intimate relationships, and they have trouble finding their voice, and you really supporting them to you want to talk a bit about that?
Yes, absolutely. Greg, you haven't misquoted me at all. They do have difficulty actually connecting with their own strengths and what are basically manhood or masculine features, and particularly in relationships, if they're insulted or put down in any way, they may find it difficult to find the words to defend that. But besides that, it's even more in terms of their own identity, of what you're referring to in one of the chapters of my book, asking the men about what some of the strengths men bring to their relationships. And that question consistently stumped the six men, that were interviewed for the book, and similarly in my clinical work and other conversations I've had with men that aren't clients. It's the same thing. It's like, well, no one's ever really asked me that question, and I've never really thought of myself in that way that I could offer something intimately or even as a person. And so often when I might bring up some things that friends do that I appreciate, male friends do that I appreciate, or how they help me with some of my weaknesses, the look on their face, a bit dumbfounded, but eventually the thanks comes out. Just going, oh yeah, okay, that is an important part. And I think that's a really important issue that International Men's Day can promote. So having a review of some of the Maitland City Council media that happened regarding Councillor Penfold's motion, and very happy to hear they got some support for International Men's Days, about this issue of equating men's health just with disease management or symptom management, as opposed to health promotion or a prevention over cure approach, which is what I would equate with valuing manhood and masculinity and the strengths and benefits that it does contribute to society, to their families and to their kids. So I believe there was a statement by Councillor Tierney about really making the most of International Men's Health Week, which is great, dealing with illness and suicide prevention. Now, that's great on the disease management side of things, but it really ignores and puts a block on what something like International Men's Day can do, which is health promotion. It's a prevention over cure approach. It's about valuing men. It's about valuing them regardless of sickness. So I'm really mindful of not equating men's health with sickness, but about healthy masculinity and gender appreciation, full stop, the way women are appreciated, which is brilliant, and I certainly appreciate that. It's doing the same thing for men without them having to fight for their own masculinity.
I've got a quote here from Phil Gouldson, who used to be the president of the Men's Health and Wellbeing Association in the ACT. He was one of the first, they were one of the first groups in Australia to celebrate International Men's Day. And he says that to mark the occasion of International Men's Day, which symbolised strength of character and courage in meeting the challenges men face in building better, safer communities and in reaching their full potential. So obviously your argument that we have Father's Day that celebrates the role of fathers, but not all men are fathers. And
that's right.
We have International Men's Health Week, which is about men's health, but men are about much more than their health.
Absolutely.
And there's no day that just celebrates manhood, masculinity, and all of the diverse roles that men play as fathers, but also, you know, in their roles at work, in their families,
yes.
You know, as uncles, as, you know, as the guys who clean up our trash every day. I mean,
absolutely.
All of those roles.
I think an important point that really needs to get out there that people perhaps may not be appreciating as much is that if you want to efficiently help all of those statistics that unfortunately aren't in men's favour at times when it comes to their health, if you really want to efficiently help those stats, you need to realise that men's health is wrapped up in men's identity. A lot of the things that you were just specifying there of the various roles men play, and that quote you just read out that encapsulates how much men's strengths, like their courage and their strength and their ability to do strength-based work physically, but also their focus and their diligence that I see in a lot of businessmen that I might work with clinically or otherwise, that can be applied to really advancing our society. And it's bringing men's health and men's identity into appreciation for the 21st century. We've had a lot of gender changes in the last few decades, and men and women's roles have changed and merged and now overlap. They're not necessarily as clear-cut, and that can be a strength and a benefit for men and women. So it's being able to draw out men's strengths and see, really encourage how we can adapt them for the 21st century, help men see that, and importantly help everyone in society see that, because once men have got that appreciation and acknowledgement, I've not had any trouble seeing them apply themselves and apply all of their strengths to the good of all, which then turns around and helps their health. So something like International Men's Day is a celebration of that without any blame and without any judgment, without any of the negativity. The way we celebrate International Women's Day, Mother's Day, Father's Day, they're all related to the strengths and benefits that each gender and people can offer to our society. We all help each other in so many ways, and this is a particular way we need to give a little bit more attention to. So I commend Councillor Penfold's efforts in what he's done with International Men's Day within Maitland City Council.
We're talking with Dr. Elizabeth Chelly, author and psychologist, and we're going to take a short musical break, and we'll be back with one last segment.
And we're talking with Dr. Elizabeth Celli. She's the author of Regular Joe versus Mr. Invincible, The Battle for the True Man. So, welcome back to the show.
Welcome. Hello. Thank you.
Now, look, all the major fathers groups in Australia are facing being defunded at the moment. Dads in Distress, Lone Father, Shared Parenting Council, the Fatherhood Festival up on the North Coast, they're all being defunded by this government. How does this little microcosm of Maitland fit into the whole thing, do you think? Are we seeing a swing back away from it or what?
Back away from what? John, what are you referring
from to? The funding, under the Howard government, there was at least limited funding to different men's groups, and now do you think with the change of government, they seem to be, as far as we're aware, a lot of those groups are about to lose funding. Do you think that there's a swing again away from supporting men and providing those sort of social supports that they need?
I find it quite curious about the funding changes that are happening, given that we're in the process of Australia's first national men's health policy being developed, and there's all of this talk about helping men, and yet on the ground level, services that seem to be working and actually attending to an important part of our community and men's health needs are being defunded. So I find that quite curious. Something like Maitland City Council might be a swing around there, but hey, when you're talking federal as opposed to a local council, the funding from the federal sources is obviously going to keep something more sustainable and attended on a much broader level. It was interesting in the newspaper on Sunday here in Melbourne, I read a comment by one of the columnists there toward the National Men's Health Policy process, and that columnist had made a comment toward, I don't know if it was the federal minister directly, but all we've heard so far is some of the controversy around men's health ambassadors. Come on, let's get some real stuff happening with the National Men's Health Policy now. And I thought that was quite an apt comment there. So to defund programs that are working whilst the first National Men's Health Policy is underway is actually quite interesting. I actually wonder, guys, as we sort of look at this whole deal of International Women's Day, International Men's Day. When you look at something like International Women's Day, it acknowledges and supports that women have got a valuable role to play in society, and no one's arguing that, and yet with a lot of my clinical and speaking work, I get the impression of this resistance and perhaps this fear from women or anxiety, which I've been very curious about, and I've sort of delved into and had a few chats with people about it, and I get the impression that women may fear, given from where we've come from, that there might be, if we give too much attention on men's health, then that means we'll undermine or we'll shove women back into the corner. And that's so not the case. I think the anxiety needs to be acknowledged, and the fear that some women may be experiencing may be there for reasons of years gone by, but it's so not the case now, and it's so important to realise that it's not about getting too much attention on men's health. It's about getting the right attention onto men's health and manhood and masculinity. And I think the discussion we've had so far of men's roles, how they play out, I even talk about those in a TV stint that's on my website, of really appreciating in practicality within the family men's roles, that giving them the right attention within the family, with their children, at a local council level and at a federal level, you'll create a supportive environment that you'll then start to see a positive turnaround in men's health statistics. You'll start to see an improvement in men's health, and something like International Men's Day is a prevention over cure approach. It's a positive health promotion strategy happening on a national level that can filter down and encourage men and women alike when they all see it's there for us to appreciate each other again. If I can give just a personal story, on the weekend I was at a Rotary conference, and driving back from the country location, I stopped by my sister's place, and I have three nephews, and one of my nephews has four kids of his own, three girls and a boy. And all of us, my sister, her husband, my nephew and his family and the kids, were just having an absolute ball. And I was observing my nephew and my brother-in-law and how they just got out there and played with the kids. I'd promised to take my nephew to the skate park where he could show me some of his tricks. And I said, look, it'll just be you and I going, because I can't take all of your kids. You won't fit in my car. But he came up to me and he said, oh, can we take one of my nieces? Because she's really good at it too. Like, she's really good at the tricks as well. And I thought, How brilliant is that? You know, it wasn't about a he or a she or she can't or he can't. It was about she's really good at it, so am I, so can we share it together and can we go together? And I think that if we can take some of that principle from my nieces and nephews and bring it into adults and how they can relate to each other again on a basis of understanding, then I think we'll get a long way, and I think International Men's Day will start to pave the way.
That's great. Look, unfortunately, we're out of time, but thank you once again, Dr. Elizabeth Chelly, and our other guests today, Councillor Philip Penfold and Warwick Marsh, for coming on to Dads on the Air. It's been a very interesting program. That's it for Tuesday, the 24th of March, 2009. We'll be back again next week with more on men, fathers and male issues.
Don't forget our website, www.dadsontheair.net.
We're dead.